You're in the zone.
Let's start with sports. Do you guys still have the six TV question?
We do have that one. That is Tua Tagovailoa had a big day on Sunday in the comeback win.
With Jason Anderson.
Tua Tagovailoa
on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
If you're scoring at home, that's Tua Tagovailoa. That's right. Or Tua Tagovailoa. Either one. It's more than two losses for the Chiefs against the Bengals this calendar year.
Nice.
0-3. Let's talk to Field Yates, NFL insider from ESPN, joining us here on the show. Field, what is up, man? How are you, sir?
Jason, I'm doing well, and I have a story to share with you.
Please, go ahead.
I heard your struggles with Tua's last name, Tagovailoa, and obviously it's one that is struggled, but I mean, a lot of people struggle with that last name, and I think probably Tua understands exactly why. It's a very long last name. There are lots of syllables. That is often the recipe to screw up a last name, but you are not alone. However, I've had to work on that last name many a time in various duties at ESPN, and I got into a comfort zone with Tagovailoa, which, if you go look at any media guide right now, whether it's Alabama or Miami, or even all the way back to his St. Louis high school days in Honolulu, Hawaii, you will see that is the correct pronunciation. About a year and a half or so, though, from right now ago, Adam Schefter received a piece of fan mail, and it really wasn't much of fan mail. It was a piece of mail from some gentleman who wanted to let him know that he and I were pronouncing Tua's last name incorrectly. He gave us a different pronunciation, Tagovailoa, which is incorrect. We were using the correct pronunciation, and he wanted to let us know that we were both gigantic a-holes. So, it's okay. Schefter has posted the letter on his Instagram account in the past. I want to see if I can dig that out. And if so, I'll send it your way. I just want to let you know that you're not alone.
Yeah, I get annoyed by that returner because that may be the only time, and I'm not even joking, that may be one of the only times I've actually messed up on his name, because I've gotten many conversations with people to where they're like, why are you saying Tong? Because they're like, yeah, there's no in there. No, but you pronounce it Tagovailoa. You start with the tongue. Sorry, mark that.
I can already imagine the in cut for next week's segment when I hear that exact line replayed one more time. But yeah, I mean, listen, Brett Favre, it was spelled F-A-V-R-E, like
favor.
People just got to know this. So yeah, favor. People need to know that names. We have a weird language we speak, and a weird language in the way we spell things. So that's all I have on Tua and spelling for the week. More next Monday at noon Arrowhead time here on the show.
Hello, gentlemen. I have been a fan of both your works for the various shows on ESPN platforms. You both do great work, and I appreciate it. Now, for informational purposes, I'm a retired radio/TV announcer, a commercial voice, and voiceover artist. So I know how to pronounce these words. The problem is, you don't. The rest of it's not quite as excellent, but boy, I mean, he really nailed the landing on that one.
Here's the problem.
So good.
Here's the problem. You don't. All right, so what do you take away from yesterday's game? We're trying to, you know, we've talked a lot about the different things from that, but what's your general reaction and takeaway from the 27-24 win by the Bengals?
Yeah, so if we look back at a couple of the Chiefs' losses this season, they've lost to, I think, two of the three best teams in the AFC, the third team being themselves. You can't lose to yourself. Although I guess you could argue the Chiefs lost to themselves against the Colts when they just sort of piddled down their leg in that effort, which feels like forever ago, and I still can't believe the Colts actually won that game. But you know, you're going to have opportunities to play the very best on occasion during the season, and these are sort of measuring stick games, and I think that the Chiefs and Bills, and I think the Bengals as well, right now are the three best teams in the AFC. I don't think it's particularly close. And the Chiefs are 0-2 in those games. What does it mean? Here's what I would say, is that the dynamic the Chiefs don't have when they play the Bengals is they don't have the element of fear that you and I have talked about this a bunch. The Chiefs are so good, and they're so well-coached, and they're so tactical, and they're just so efficient that I can't tell you how many times we've seen a team, oftentimes in their own division, do something extremely dumb in a critical moment against the Chiefs. And it's because I tend to think that some of it is just like a fear knowing that one error could be the difference between a win and a loss, and they make that one error. Cincinnati has acquired confidence about them against Kansas City. I don't think that the Chiefs are decidedly worse team than Cincinnati. It was a big environment they went and saw on Sunday in Cincinnati. I think these two teams are very, very good, and it wouldn't surprise me if two of those three teams are playing in the AFC Championship game in late January.
You mean two of those teams would be playing in the AFC.
You meant Tagovailoa of those teams.
That's exactly right. Thank you. It's pronounced Devon. Field Yates is our guest.
You know,
from.
I probably need to give the Dolphins a bit more credit there, because they probably are marching in on that that fourth. They might be in the mix as well. They are so explosive on offense.
They are. But I want to talk about them in a little bit, but since you brought it up, we may, you know, double back and get back into the Chiefs. The 33-17 loss to the 49ers, even without Jimmy Garoppolo, did that, you know, bring them down a notch, maybe the Dolphins that were moving up closer and closer to saying, are the Dolphins maybe the third team in the AFC behind the Chiefs and Bills? But this weekend, Dolphins lose 33-17 and the Bengals go and beat the Chiefs. Maybe they now flip seats in the pecking order in the AFC.
Yeah, it's a great question, and I think we'll find out more over the next couple of weeks, and not to be obvious here, but, Miami and Minnesota, man, they had some weird, weird quarterback luck, and it was like, of course Miami faces off against Brock Purdy yesterday, right? Because look at some of the quarterbacks they have faced prior to that game this season, and the hard part about Miami is that if you go back during the five-game winning streak prior to the loss yesterday, Steelers, Lions, Bears, Browns without Deshaun Watson, and the Texans. Like, which of those teams screams, like, wow, like, that's an awesome football team? The answer is none of them, obviously. So then they go and lose to San Francisco. Over the next couple of weeks, they have the Chargers. That game is in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. So they're staying on the West Coast for the week. They play the Chargers this upcoming Sunday night. Then they have the Bills in Buffalo the following Saturday, which was announced just as you and I were about to get on the air. So I know that every team could find a schedule gripe somewhere, but Miami is about to earn whatever happens over the next couple of weeks. That is a very difficult stretch right there. So I think they're close. You know, Miami, I just don't think has been tested the same way, and they've got two offensive tackles that are hurt right now. And if those guys aren't back soon, it could be a big problem.
All right, visiting with Field Yates from ESPN, our NFL insider. So one of the takeaways and reactions that we've had around here the last two times they have faced the Bengals, the Chiefs have, is the inability to bring down Joe Burrow, where it seems like other teams haven't struggled as much to bring down Joe Burrow. Now, to be fair, the Titans got one sack on Joe Burrow last week. Chiefs got one sack on Joe Burrow yesterday. But they got one sack on Joe Burrow when they faced off against the Bengals in the AFC Championship game. So they haven't been able to bring him down. When you look at the Chiefs offense, and people have been dissecting and saying, how do you stop them for a long time? As we look at the Bengals offense, is the key to pressure and bring down Joe Burrow? Is that the only way you're stopping Cincinnati? That if you can't bring him down, then those wide receivers and, you know, running game or whatever is, and Joe Burrow, you know, in particular, are too good to, you know, be able to play a whole game where you only get a negative, you know, play from a sack one time or two times in a game?
That's probably what it is. And it's, you don't really slow down or stop the Bengals deep offense. You just kind of manage them a little bit. In the same way that no one goes to Kansas City and says, hey, if we can hold Patrick Mahomes to 13 points, we've got this. Like, okay, sweet. Like, I would like to hold the 2000 Rams to 13 points as well, right? That will be a good way to go into the game and finish it off. So I think it really is about management against Joe Burrow. And, you know, I live in the New England area, so I still hear plenty of local coverage for all the New York teams and also the Patriots. And on Thanksgiving night, when Justin Jefferson had a big night, people were talking around here locally, like, you know, where do they go wrong? And it's like, you know, Justin Jefferson might be the best wide receiver in football, right? Like, what happened yesterday was not like the Chiefs have some sort of like fatal flaw, right? Maybe it's that Joe Burrow is, I would think, probably like, you know, and I hate the fact that we're always doing this conversation, but if you were to do an MVP poll right now, he's a top five candidate, right? Like, Joe Burrow's awesome. He's one of the, you know, he's been one of the best quarterbacks through two and a half seasons in NFL history. Like, I don't think there's some major, I don't know, like, I don't consider this like a massive stain on the Chiefs' defensive resume that yesterday they went to Cincinnati and a team that has Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, even without Joe Mixon, like, Samaje Perine's a more than capable backup running back, 27 points. Like, if this was a 47-44 game, I think the conversation is more interesting. But the Bengals always are going to bring their best against the Chiefs. They're a good team on both sides of the ball. They're good in the special teams as well. Like, I thought 27-24 was trying to think of the right way to put it, like a non-notable result in the sense that, like, you know, someone had to win the game, someone had to lose the game. But it's not like I walked away and I thought to myself after that, like, uh-oh, like, this could be a long couple, you know, the Chiefs might not be able to advance very far in the postseason. That's, maybe I'm being too stoic about this, but I really didn't feel dramatically differently about the Chiefs after that game as I did before that game.
Yeah, the interesting sort of feel of post-game Bengals, post-game Bills around here. After the Bills game, you and I had a conversation that it was odd that there wasn't much frustration or complaints or even, you know, nitpicking of the Chiefs and Bills. It was a, okay, now you see them. You may have lost the game, but a play here or there, you win. And if they're the favorites to win the Super Bowl, you may have to go there, but you're not walking in there going, boy, you got to play your A-plus game and hope they play a C and, you know, pull off an upset. You know, you can play on the field with them. So there was a level or a feel of that around here. And after this one, it's not that. It's a, you know, what's going on? The defense is an issue. Choosing to go for the field goal. You can't sack and bring down Joe Burrow. Tackling is an issue. Like all of these things that we saw in the game. Whereas if we looked at it the same way we did the Bills game, you could actually have the same takeaway of there are about 20 plays in that game against the Bills and about 20 plays in the game against the Bengals that if they're flipped, you might be talking about a different result. Both of them ended up losses. But I think part of that also, Field, is there's more respect around here for Buffalo
thank
and the Bills
you.
Than
okay,
there are the
thank
Bengals.
You.
That's
thank
what
you.
Is.
Okay, I was getting ready to report exactly what you were saying. By this is simple. Fans respect / fear Josh Allen and the Bills more than they do the Bengals. And let's look at the context of these games. Like, coming into the KC game against Buffalo, I believe the Bills had just one loss at that point. And that was the game that they lost to the Ravens, to the Dolphins, in which, like, half their team was gone. It was just the most ridiculous game. And somehow they almost won the game. They played, like, 93 snaps on offense. It was, like, everything that could go wrong in critical moments did go wrong. It's different here. Cincinnati started the season 0-2, and, you know, I think that while they are absolutely deserving of as much respect and fear as almost any team in the AFC, like, this all happened very fast in Cincinnati, right? No one was talking about them as a deep playoff threat going into the last playoffs. Everybody was kind of like, this is a cool story. It's great to see the franchise taking positive steps, but we're on a collision course. The Chiefs, Bills, in the divisional round, and that might as well be the AFC Championship game or even the Super Bowl. And I think that the Bengals have proven they deserve and have earned plenty of respect, and that this is a team that, when we talk about the hierarchy of the AFC, is right there in the conversation. Now, they've got to do some work just to win their own division. Certainly seems like they are a reasonable bet to win that division, with Lamar Jackson likely to miss some period of time here for the Ravens. But yeah, I think it's as simple as there's just a different level of respect for the Bills and Josh Allen. And by the way, I love Joe Burrow. I think Joe Burrow is a freaking rock star. But if I were a defensive coordinator, I too would be more afraid of the guy who's 240 pounds, runs like a running back, and throws the ball all over the yard. Like, that's not a disrespect to Joe Burrow. That is instead a reflection of just how darn good Josh Allen is, in the same way that Joe Burrow and Patrick Mahomes strike a lot of fear into opposing coordinators' mind as well.
There is going to be a fascinating matchup on January 2nd on Monday night between the Bills and the Bengals there in Cincinnati in week 17 and game 16. A lot of attention being paid. Last one for you real quick. As you're guessing right now today, December 5th, who gets the one seed in the AFC?
I'm going to go Buffalo, and honestly, my answer is going to be pretty simple. It's going to be who currently has the lead.
Right,
And obviously the Bills would have, like, if I look at their schedule the rest of the way, the toughest game is, as you just mentioned, at Cincinnati. That might be the game that tilts one way or the other, the number one seed. But I look at the schedules as, like, relatively comparable. You know, I think the Chiefs certainly have a lot of winnable games. The toughest one for them is, probably, I would think, either
Seattle
or
at home.
Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas at home. Yeah, Vegas on the road, yeah. Vegas on the road.
Just with the way that Vegas is playing right now.
Yeah.
Better football for sure. So, and they played them well the first time around, even though they didn't lose. So I'll give Buffalo the slight edge, but, you know, this is really, like, it's borderline coin flip territory. I think Cincinnati does have a chance, but it would obviously be tough for Cincinnati because their schedule down the stretch is very, very difficult. I know they're very good, but their schedule the rest of the way is extremely tough. They have the Browns, and I know they have Tampa. I know they have New England, who Patriots aren't great right now, but you never know. It's a long season, and they do have Buffalo, obviously, as we talked about as well.
All right, Field Yates, ESPN, NFL Insider. Field, you're the man. Really appreciate the time, sir. Thank you so much for the time, and we'll talk to you next week, bud.
Shout out to Tua Tagovailoa as well.
There you go, Field. You're the man. Field Yates and
Yahtzee, actually. It's Field Yahtzee.
A good portion of discussing Tua Tagovailoa here on the show.
Again, you guys mentioned that right at the beginning because this all broke right at noon. But yeah. 7:15 Eastern on Saturday, December 17th, Dolphins-Bills. So we can all come together, watch it all in prime time Saturday night, pull our hair out, root for one side or the other. But Dolphins have the chance to knock Buffalo off there. Obviously, it'd be huge.
That'd be nice. That would be nice. But Dolphins licking their wounds from the dominant performance by the 49ers, even without Jimmy Garoppolo. Two interceptions for Tua Tagovailoa, another fumble loss. He had three turnovers in that game yesterday, and a couple of them were for touchdowns.
I just actually looked again at the Tyreek Hill trade terms, and this also says, and the Bills will, or the Dolphins will make sure to beat the Bills in December this year.
Interesting.
So,
okay.
I got to double check a second source on that, but that's huge news.
So this upcoming season's fourth rounder conditionalizes up to a second if they don't beat the Bills?
You know, the all of that conditional pick math is very... One of these involves Ryan Poles. I don't know.
Something like that.
Something
I'm
going
not sure.
On.
All right, we'll take a timeout. We'll come back. We'll hear from Andy Reid next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
If cheese was an antidote, I would be the healthiest man in the world right now. You have no idea how much cheese I've eaten in the last year.
Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
All right, thank you to Field Yates right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We'll talk with Mick Schaefer coming up in the 1 o'clock hour. KSHB 41 Sports Director. Sunday sound off last night with Mick. Good time. Talk some Chiefs. We talk K-State winning the Big 12. And the fun way in which they won. And the feel of TCU's going to get it. This is what TCU does. This is what TCU does. It's what they do.
Such a
K-State's
fun
like, no. You know, if you listened to the show about a month ago, you would have known that K-State was going to win that game. You didn't have to watch it. You didn't even have to watch the rest of the Big 12 season play out. A month ago, I told you, Kansas State is going to make the Big 12 championship game, and they will beat TCU. For a month, I've been saying that, you fools.
I watched it just for the entertainment value, but I already knew what was going to happen. So it was like watching a movie with spoilers. You know, they'd been spoiled a month ago. So.
Also told everybody last week, Moneyline. Don't worry about K-State plus the points. Moneyline.
Why don't you spoil some NFL weekends for me? Because I could use the help
line.
On that one.
No. See, the thing is, I only do that when I'm right.
Oh, okay.
I don't talk about literally every single bet I lost yesterday.
Okay.
Now, they were very close to winning. A ton of money.
Yeah.
Turns out, zero.
Yeah.
Nobody cares.
Damn you, Travis Kelce, and your anytime touchdown. Maybe damn you, DJ Reader. Because... Kelce might have scored a touchdown on the third down and three.
Yeah, it was there.
On the first drive. Catches it, turns. He might have scored. But you want to talk about luck or unlucky or creating your luck, all of that stuff. That play specifically. They blitzed. And because they were blitzing, Reader's job was to take the center and the guard to their left, his right. And by going in that direction... He then sticks a hand up and he's in the passing lane. If he just rushes straight ahead, that's an obvious window, and Kelce catches the ball. Didn't happen. But
the Bengals
just
were
like,
ready for a lot of that stuff. They made plays like, in those moments all the time.
Like the timing of that. He's rushing to his right. He's almost turned, you know, away from, like his left shoulder is almost facing Mahomes, and he sticks his right hand up, and it's exactly where the ball is going to go. Like, it's just, not only that, though, like if that was covered... Juju standing wide open at the top. But it didn't matter because Kelce was also wide open. It's like not like Mahomes missed a wide open guy and tried to force it to Kelce. They were both wide open. Ball gets knocked down. It happens. It's a football game. Sometimes you make the plays. Sometimes you don't. Sometimes you win. Sometimes you lose. Sometimes it rains. Sometimes you're in somebody else's movie. All right, Andy Reid talking today about that Bengals loss and looking ahead to the rest of the season and the AFC West and some more matchups to go with that. Says that, you know, they just didn't have enough to beat the Bengals.
All in all, I thought we did some good things. We just had a couple mistakes down the stretch. And when two good teams are playing each other, yeah, that takes place. And it can cost you. And so that's kind of what happened. Not that there weren't plays in between there that needed to be made likewise, you know, but down the stretch, when you have an opportunity to potentially go up on them and make it real difficult, you know, we can't have the things happen that happen. Anyways, with that, time's yours.
Go first to Adam Teicher. Go ahead, Adam.
Hey, Andy, you talked a little bit after the game last night about that decision to try the field goal toward the end of the game there. Just curious what your thinking was on the third down, because you remember Pat took a sack, lost 4 or 5 yards. Were you thinking after the third down play you were in four down territory, or were you always thinking you were in field goal mode? And Brad will have a second question as well.
Yeah, I thought we were in field goal mode, so... that's what I said last night. That's what, you know.
Okay. Well, you were in field goal mode pretty much the whole on third down as well there.
No, on third down I was trying to get a first down.
No, I understand that, but you were thinking field goal there if that pass was incomplete or something like that.
Yeah, potentially, okay. Yes.
Okay. All right. You can clinch the division Sunday if you win and if some other things happen. Were you thinking entering this year, this might be the most difficult of years to get that done, just given the moves that all the other AFC West teams have made this year?
I tell you, yes. I thought all the AFC West teams bettered themselves. I thought we, you know, which has already been said, but had one of the tougher schedules in the league. And I'm proud of how the guys have kind of battled through that to get to this point.
It's interesting. He thought this year was going to be the most difficult AFC West championship or AFC West sort of run to win a championship in the division. I stand corrected. I mean, I'm shocked that I got that wrong. I mean, shocked, I tell you. I'm floored. I don't even know how to proceed. I said earlier, and you know, all sarcasm aside, I said earlier that on 3rd and 3, I thought they were in the mindset of, we will go for it on 4th down. This is a 2-down territory to pick up the 4th down. And then when Mahomes got sacked, lost 4 yards, and was hobbled a little bit, let's kick the field goal. Nope. They were going to kick the field goal, even if Mahomes didn't get sacked.
They should have been doing what you said you thought they were doing.
That's bothersome.
Should have been.
Man, that's bothersome.
I've gotten all the way to 12:30 today and haven't mentioned the fact that they took 3 points early in the game also on 4th and 3, was it?
4th and 3,
I think,
yeah.
That sounds about right. Yeah, I know. Four more points in that game may have helped.
Right after the play that we just talked about, they got batted down at mm-hmm. the line of scrimmage that mm-hmm. Kelsey and Juju were both open. And the Bengals blitzed. They brought a blitz. They brought two different guys. Juju was so wide open because his corner blitzed. And so nobody was there to guard Juju. And again, Mahomes is seeing Kelsey. So I just want to restate. This is revisionist if you say, or if I were to say, dude, just look at Juju, where the blitz is coming from. Mm-hmm. Throw the ball. He scores a touchdown. The cornerback did not show blitz. He was on Juju, did not even look inside until the snap, and then he ran. And so Juju just stood there like, hey, and then he kind of ran a slant. But the read for Mahomes was, oh, Kelsey's right there. And Kelsey was wide open. That was the right read. Pre-snap, they showed no indication of bringing the cornerback on a blitz. They did blitz, and Kelsey would have had to be immediately guarded. Mm-hmm. And the read not there for you to see Juju up top on the blitz. But it was just unfortunate timing. But that was 4th down and 3, and then they kicked the field goal. But they were in field goal mode. Even if that pass was incomplete and Mahomes did not lose 4 yards on the sack.
Felt like they're in field goal mode all night.
Goal. Well, no, they went for it on fourth down.
They did.
They went for it on fourth down a couple times.
Twice.
Yes.
Got it both times.
Fourth and goal. I mean, the Air Mahomes doesn't happen if they kick the field goal.
Air Mahomes on fourth and goal and fourth in whatever it was in midfield.
Fourth and four.
Fourth and
Juju picked up five.
Fourth and mid in midfield. The Chiefs were aggressive because the field position game there doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. They went for it and it turned into a touchdown at the end of that drive.
And that was a hell of a play by Juju.
It really was.
I mean, because.
Really was.
The I thought it was a really good job of tackling. It's just you're tackling somebody who's a damn near a tight end. Juju was a cheeseburger away from being a tight end. What they say that about a Florida State player that went and played for the Panthers?
Florida State? Kelvin Benjamin?
Kelvin Benjamin. Kelvin Benjamin's like a cheeseburger away from being a tight end. Then he was.
The reason I doubted you being a Kelvin Benjamin reference is my memory of Kelvin Benjamin is he was a couple of cheeseburgers away from being an offensive guard.
Oh, it was like, boy, it's a big deal. He could be a tight end. And then he was.
He was.
All right, Andy Reid says that the Bengals did a good job of protecting Joe Burrow.
Yeah, you know, we got around him. We just didn't get him on the ground, which we've got to do a better job with. He has a knack for getting out of there, and he did a good job. It wasn't that we didn't have people around him. That wasn't the case. Majority of the time there were people there. He slithered underneath.
Let's go next to Matt McMullen. Go ahead, Matt.
Hey, Coach. You mentioned last night how this can be a learning experience for your guys. What gives you confidence that they can take this and become better because of it?
Well, you learn from every game, but when you have a young team, that was a pretty good football team you're playing. So you can learn. You learn from your experience out there against good skill players, how you have to handle them. You learn that every opportunity you got to take advantage of. And I know the punters didn't have a big day, but you want to keep them off the field as much as you possibly can from your offensive side. And then touchdowns obviously become important. Turnovers become important. All your situational football is magnified when you have two good teams playing against each other.
Yeah, situational football becomes a huge talking point after the game is over of what took place in those situations. Did you execute? What was the call? Did you go for it? Did you kick? Did you punt? Whatever that might be. Interesting. Asked, can you learn from the game and what do you learn? Well, not only can you, but you say you learn from the game. What can you learn? He says, well, you learn from every game, loss, whatever. But with a young team, and the first thing he said was, when you're going up against skill position players like that, you learn how to handle them and different. His first thought is that secondary is learning a lot from that game. That secondary, you just went up against one of the best wide receiving cores in the league. Okay, now you know. Now you know what it's like. Okay, there's some good receivers that are out there, but the combination of T and Jamar and even Tyler Boyd, who dropped the football, and that's the first drop he's had, I think, since the French and Indian War.
And he got wide open for it.
Yeah. Which was, by the way, offensive pass interference, but no big deal. That was an easy one where Jamar Chase didn't even try to hide it. He actually just chucked his elbow out at the, but whatever. Okay, skill position. The first thing he said that, yeah, with a young team, you learn how to handle a team with skill position players and how you go up against them. And then he got into, well, situational football is, it's, you know, magnified and things like that, you know, but.
He's right about the young corners. That's a great learning experience for a group. We said there would be growing pains. The defense has been better than I expected it to be multiple times this season. And frankly, I thought those young corners did okay yesterday. Yeah. Trent McDuffie especially. But that's a lot of experience for a dude out of Fayetteville State. Joshua Williams a year ago was playing football for Fayetteville State.
Mm-hmm.
I know where that is only because I know where Fayetteville is. I don't know anything else about the school.
And I know it's not even a state. That's what's crazy about it. Like,
really? I thought it was the one next to Arkansas.
Not number. There's only 50.
But Alaska's not real.
So it's, all right, that makes sense.
I thought it was the 50th.
Fayetteville is the 50th. I get it now. I don't put any blame or anything on the 3rd and 11 on Williams. I thought he played it well. He was there. It was a tight window throw. T. Higgins goes and makes the play. It happens. The Williams mistake I thought he made, and, you know, a thousand plays that happen in a football game, it was the Jamar Chase third and five, that he was the outside corner, and when Jamar Chase caught the ball, his first step was inside of T. Higgins, who then just blocked him to the inside, which allowed Jamar Chase to turn the corner. Also, the biggest issue on that one was Juan Thornhill's terrible pursuit and stopping and stuttering based on Jamar Chase just stopping a touch when McDuffie was to his inside. You had help there, and you overreacted to a small little stutter. But Jamar Chase got around the outside because then Williams was being blocked to the inside by T. Higgins. Andy Reid says the Bengals switched a few things up defensively against the Chiefs yesterday.
You know what, Seren, they added a little bit more just straight zero in there. They pop with it normally, but they showed us a couple a la blitzes, and I thought, you know, Pat and 11 did a nice job of working, you know, working that down the field. So they did a good job against it, but they did the drop eight against us. I thought we were productive against it.
And then the roughing, I'm not asking about the roughing the passer penalty per se. I know you can't get into that, and you don't want to criticize the refs and get fined and all that, but what is the, is there a paragraph you've got somewhere that describes how you're supposed to hit a quarterback and not end up with a flag? Does the league have details on that?
Seren, it's something new, and it's all over the place, I think. We're getting different looks. I thought, you know, I didn't agree with that. Now, John's a heck of an official, too. So, but this thing we've got to get worked out and worked through, because I didn't see that one.
That's towing the line for Andy Reid in talking about officials. So probably as much as you're going to get from a coach that doesn't want to get fined. Oh, it's all over the place. We got to get figured out. I didn't agree with that one, but he is a heck of an official. That is a really good official. I didn't agree with that one. Those things happen. We got screwed on that one. That is a BS call. We lost the game because of that. Here's a fine.
I think a compliment sandwich usually is enough to get you not fined. And that's what it was right there. It was, it's all over the place. We got to get this figured out. What a heck of an official. I didn't see it, though.
Yeah, I think it was back-to-back plays that Andy Reid had real problems with the officials, because he was chewing the ear of the official that threw the flag on the pass interference as that official was going back down the field. Here's the thing. Stallworth's played in the league a long time. You know you can't have both arms underneath the quarterback when you fall.
I just don't. I don't know what to do there. I just don't know. I don't know what to tell a 300-pounder what to do with his body weight at that point, man.
They've told him you take your right or left hand out, and he knew it when he landed. Then all of a sudden he pulled his right, like, oh,
right.
So he knew what he did. I think maybe reacting like that, even like reacting that abruptly, might have been the official going, oh, wait, you did have both hands on. You did wrap your arms around him and then land on him. How dare you? That is 15. Had you wrapped your arms around him and then right before hitting the ground, you put an arm out, that is not 15 yards, but that arm stayed in. That's 15 yards. And I wouldn't have known that until you showed me that. Oh, see, thou doth protest much. That is a 15-yarder, buddy. Also, that wasn't the biggest or most pivotal call of that drive, even though they brought in Gene Steratore to talk about that, and said, well, let's talk about the pivotal penalty call on this drive. No, it would have still been 2nd and 10. The pivotal call was whether or not, I wanted to hear Gene Steratore weigh in on whether or not that was pass interference. Sure. When McDuffie and Jamar Chase got their feet tangled up, because that's 7 points off the board for the Bengals, and the Chiefs have first and goal at the 8. That's potentially a 14, at least a 10-point swing.
The Chiefs didn't hit Joe Burrow, and they did hit him. They hit him too hard. Cool. Awesome.
You got him too good.
I love it here.
Got him too good. But no, Andy Reid not happy. And clearly it is a point of frustration with the coaches, because we've heard many coaches talk about the roughing the passer. And as he said, there's something new. It's all over the place. We're getting different looks. We got to get this thing figured out. I didn't agree with the call. Also, he talked about switching things up defensively for the Bengals, that they did more cover zero, more all-out blitzes, and they did. The play we were just talking about, 3rd and 3, 3rd and goal from the 3-yard line, when the Chiefs settled for the field goal the first drive, They brought a blitz. They brought a corner. They brought a linebacker. They came and blitzed the Chiefs. They did that a number of times more than we saw them do last year. And that was a switch up. Okay, when are they blitzing? When are they not? I don't know. Maybe that's why the Chiefs didn't run it on third and three. They thought maybe they might bring the all-out blitz on third and three. Nope, they dropped eight. So there you go. Andy Reid thinks that Cincinnati had a good game plan against Travis Kelce yesterday.
Yeah, listen, they did a good job. Now, left other people open. But they and I could have let me start that with this, Sam, that I could have dialed up more things that were a little bit more friendly for him too, and got him into space a little bit more. So some of that is on the calls. Other is they had a plan for him, you know, where they were going to double in and out him and, you know, take him out. Now, it opened up things for the other guys to be productive, but we take a lot of pride in being able to get guys open when somebody has a plan on them. And then second half, we did a little better with it. So, and Trav did better.
We'll ask Nick Jacobs. Go ahead, Nick.
Andy, my question for you is, with the youth you had on secondary and the rookies on defense, what do you hope they kind of took away from playing in a playoff atmosphere like that in a game that intense and having a trio of that caliber receiver? What do you kind of hope they took away from that?
Yeah, Nick, I think that this is hurt as they are. I think that that's going to help them grow. And, you know, whether it's a leverage thing, whether it's not having to strike hard at a ball, but just getting your hand on the ball is good enough. Your footwork and how you handle that, all those things against good players. And you had a variety of sizes that you're going against. And speed. So I just think that they can, they look at it properly, you know, which they're pretty good that way. And look at it properly, they can grow from that.
Would have been nice to do that in a win, to say, boy, you went up against Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd. Like you said, different size, speed combinations that are out there, matchups. Jamar Chase, smaller, faster. T. Higgins, bigger, stronger. Tyler Boyd, sort of meaty, you know, in the middle, and a possession receiver type player. And you come away with that one, and it would be nice if you came away from that one with a win, and now you've got extra things to take away, the leverage. And I don't know if he's talking specifically of third down and 11 when he said that, you know, you just touch the ball when it's in the air. You don't really have to have the full swipe and knock the ball away. Even just touching the ball can make a difference there. The leverage thing I think is interesting, because that goes back to the Jamar Chase third and five. Those last two third downs could be something he mentioned specifically. You need to leverage in the footwork, and then the just simply touching the football when it's in the air. You don't have to knock it away and get a full hand on it. Definite learning experience. And I didn't think they got exposed. I didn't think the Chiefs went into that game and the secondary was like, oh my goodness, these young guys, that is a problem. No, it was the more expensive veterans in the defensive line. And by the way, we haven't even mentioned the linebackers.
I was going to say the same thing. I know we got a break, and we've got a whole week to talk about all this stuff, but the middle of the defense was the worst part. The young corners were getting spotlight pregame because that matchup was really intriguing. They held their own. Middle of the Chiefs defense let them down, and that is that's a tough thing to say when you've invested that much in the middle of your defense.
That was a game of where it felt like every time the Bengals ran the ball or caught the ball, just felt like they picked up three more yards than they should have.
Sure did.
Boy, just... Man, how'd they get four extra yards on that? It felt like they were... Nick Bolton hits Samaje Perine 4 yards short of a first down. That may be the only play I can remember of Nick Bolton hitting somebody and that guy gaining four more yards.
You can include Willie Gay if you want.
Oh, so Willie
Gay
was bad too.
Nick Bolton.
No, Willie Gay was bad. They were both bad.
They were slow. They were slow to the holes.
Yeah.
And frequently, you saw them get, if not 4 yards, get hit at that point of contact, and then hold on for dear life while they picked up two or three more. Those yards add up. Those are meaningful hidden yards. I understand Jamar Chase running through Trent McDuffie. That's an unfair fight by weight class. Nick Bolton can't be getting bowled over by Samaje Perine. That cannot happen, yeah. And it did.
Yeah, and you know, we can pick out individual plays of where, like, here's some frustration. But, you know, there was one. I go back to the Jeffrey Simmons when Mahomes ran for 20 yards on 3rd and 17 or whatever, and Jeffrey Simmons was kind of just jogging and like, oh, wait, I'm in the play.
Yep.
The play that was kind of a broken play by Burrow in the backfield where he ended up just running it almost behind the running back and he picked up like, you know, 10 yards or whatever. If you watch when Burrow gets to the line of scrimmage, Willie Gay's like 5 feet away and just sort of just walking, not even really trying to get there. And then he sees Burrow and then he does like a shoulder lunge.
Yeah.
And Burrow just runs by him. Like, it was really surprising. The juice man that wasn't bringing the juice on that particular play. And it was kind of just going through the motions. It just felt like there was a number of going through the motions in that game for some reason. They were the hunter. They were the ones that the Bengals were the hunted. Chiefs are going to show that this is different this year. Then it just felt like it was kind of a flat effort at times. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back, wrap up this hour next.
The Zone with Jason Anderson.
Nick Bolton, like, no, hated it. I mean, just an awful player. I mean, just nothing about Nick Bolton gets me excited at all. No instincts. Really doesn't hit hard at all. That's the issue I have with
him. Weekdays from 10 to 2 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Rock Chalk. I actually did get some reaction from people that thought I was serious on that.
You made some great points. I've never heard that clip before. I assumed you recorded it after the game last night.
That's right. That's when
I'm with you across the board.
Not sure why I just recorded it and sent that audio file to Beards for
no
a returner.
Notes.
It's weird. I think that may have been after they drafted him, but did have some people like, are you serious? Like, the one thing people talk about. So it's like, what? Really? I don't know. I don't see it.
The line between bit and true take gets ever blurrier.
He had a rough game yesterday. He did. But he, along with a lot of his friends.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, it's a team game, and it's the whole team working together to blow that one. What happened? And it took a good team on the other side to not be intimidated by the Chiefs and make the plays when it mattered, because they have done it before.